The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised. Sex Out Loud is brought to you by Good Vibrations, creating a buzz since 1977.
Smart, sexy, kinky, fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud. Today's show is being recorded in front of a live studio audience at CatalystCon West in Woodland Hills, California. And my guest is former adult film star Cinnamon Love. CatalystCon is an amazing sex-positive event. You should really check out all that it has to offer. The next one is in March of 2014, and it's in Washington, D.C. Go to CatalystCon.com for more information. And if you decide to register, you can get $10 off by using the coupon code TRISTAN. Cinnamon Love is a retired adult film star and fetish model. She works as a staff writer and relationship columnist for TheWellVersed.com, as well as a freelance contributing writer for hip-hop, parenting, and feminist websites and books. In 2011, Cinnamon launched an internet radio show called Sex, Love, and Hip-Hop on DTFRadio.com. Love has also recently launched a live interview series held monthly entitled Sex, Love, and Hip-Hop Presents an Intimate Evening with, where she hosts a night of reflective conversation and talk back with some of hip-hop's most respected artists. She was profiled in the book Money Shot, The Wild Nights and Lonely Days Inside the Black Porn Industry, and her writing has appeared in Hoes, Hookers, Call Girls, and Rent Boys, along with the feminist porn book. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Cinnamon.
Thank you, Tristan.
You began performing in adult films in the early 1990s and appeared in approximately 200 movies. And I think one of the things that people may not know about you is that in terms of female African-American porn performers, you kind of broke the mold for what was the standard back then.
Absolutely. When I started doing porn in the early 90s, the standard image of porn stars in general was the big fake boobs. I mean, I'm talking the big fake porn boobs of the 80s and and these little teeny tiny skinny bodies, long, ridiculous hair weaves, and, you know, all the 80s hair. And so that crossed over into African-American performers as well. When I first got into the business, the barely legal genre was brand new. So like Jenna Jameson and I started the same year, to give you some idea that idea of the girl next door, no one had ever done it before. And when I came into the industry, there really didn't exist any women of color that fit that genre. So I was like the first one to that. I didn't have big fake boobs. I didn't have the long hair. Like, I didn't have that image at all. I was just kind of the girl next door for, you know, for black eyes.
In your chapter in the feminist porn book, I'm going to quote your piece here. Quote, this is what you write. I wrote my sexual story one chapter at a time in each and every video I've made. I've used my work in porn to explore many firsts and share those experiences with my fans. I don't think that people conceive of the porn industry as a place of sexual experimentation or evolution, but it sounds like it was for you.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, at 19, while I was very sexually active, I hadn't really had a wild sexual experiences. Like, I was interested in girls, but I hadn't actually had sex with girls yet. And so, like, my very first time actually having sex with a woman was in a porn video. It was in a movie called Women of Color 3, which was put out by Anabolic. Shawn Michaels is the director, and I worked with a girl by the name of Vanessa Chase. And I recently came across this video. Someone had posted a link to a tube site that had this video, and I was like, oh my God. So I went to go see it because I had to see it. I hadn't seen it in, it was on VHS, so I haven't seen it in a million years. And I was looking at this scene, and I had no clue what I was doing. Literally, I looked like I was terrified of hurting her with a dildo. And it was really bad. But I did a lot of scenes like that where there were things that I was interested in trying, and I just never had a chance to try them in my personal life. Where was I going to find two guys to have sex with? So I did it on screen for the first time. My first DP was on camera.
Double penetration.
My first gangbang with five white guys was on camera. I got a chance to really test out a lot of things that I was interested in, things that I had read about in, you know, Anne Rice's Sleeping Beauty trilogy, and, you know, just stuff that was in my head, or, you know, the story of things that I saw in the story of, oh, like that I was like, oh, I, that turns me on. Like, I want to try that out. I got a chance to, you know, porn gave me a safe space where I was able to try those things out.
I also think people don't, you know, get that it could be a safe space.
Absolutely.
It actually casting your own gangbang is easier than picking up five guys you don't know at a bar.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And everybody was tested. So it's, you know, and if I said no or stop, I had, or not quite yet, those limitations were respected. It wasn't a situation where I felt like I was ever in danger because, you know, here I am trying to have sex with, you know, two guys that I don't know, and I'm, you know, I don't have that kind of familiarity with them the way that I do, you know, with in porn. It was very different than, you know, trying out things in my private life without the experience to back it up.
So also in your piece in the feminist porn book, essentially the piece is kind of you talking out loud about, am I a feminist? Is this work feminist? Where do I fit within feminism? And one of the things that you talk about is how you feel much more invested in representations of Black women's sexuality than simply of women's sexuality. So tell me about that.
For me, being an African American woman, I can only speak to my experience. And one thing that I've noticed consistently within my time in the industry is that there aren't a lot of women out there or people out there in general that can speak for my experience. It's a numbers game. There just aren't a lot of women of color. There aren't as many women of color in the industry, both behind the camera and in front of the camera, as there are white women in the industry. When you come to events like Catalyst Con, I am in the minority in terms of sex educators. There's not a lot of people that either have the background to speak to my experience or that I guess it's just the background. They don't have the background to speak to it. So I want to be able to be a voice for a community of women within the adult industry that don't often get heard. And it is a big difference in how women of color are treated or viewed, both commercially as well as you know, just socially when it comes down to porn. I think it's still a lot less, socially acceptable for women of color to perform in sex work simply because of the social stigma surrounding sex in our communities, as well as just the way that we're perceived, even in a commodification level. People expect to pay women of color less money than they would other women.
And
in business.
Has that ever been your experience? That
Absolutely.
You know for a fact you were paid less than a white woman who
Absolutely.
Did the same thing in
Absolutely.
Porn?
Absolutely. I had that happen a few times. I would have directors try to offer, directors that I knew for a fact shot white performers and paid them standardized rates of $1,000 or $1,200 an hour or $1,200 for a scene, for a standard boy girl scene. But then those same directors would then offer black women, $500 or, it's like, oh, well, I only have $500 I can pay you. And people talk, I know how much somebody's getting. And while there are some performers who conflate the amount of money that they make for their scenes, you know that there are certain agents that their girls make X amount of dollars. So when a director is shooting girls from, let's say, LA Direct, and you know that those girls are making $1,000, $1,200, $1,500 for a boy-girl scene, and then they come to you and they say, well, I only have $500 or I only have $800. It's relatively offensive, but it's the budget that some of the production companies give to directors for certain types of projects because they feel that there are certain types of performers that they can pay less money. And it's not just a color thing. It also tends to be a weight thing. You see it happen in the BBW market often because there are some markets where people simply don't feel that they have to pay more money for the same types of acts. So I definitely try to give a voice to some of those, to the voiceless, basically, in my business. And it's not just porn, but other forms of sex work as well. I have had many conversations with women of color that are escorts, and sometimes that try to book at higher end rates than, but they're told that by customers that that's too much money. I usually only pay black women $150 as opposed to $500. If the average rate for a local escort in most states is $300 to $400 for the hour and high end is considered $500 to $600, those same clients might expect to pay a woman of color, whether she's black or Hispanic or Asian, $150 or $200 an hour, and then $300 is considered high end or $400 is considered high end. So it's about the value that people place on the lives of the people that they are encountering and the way that we perceive people of color still socially in this country.
I mean, this begs the question, when will this shift within the adult industry? Is it when black women and women of color get behind the camera, own their own production companies? What?
I don't know. I think it's cyclical. You still get a handful of performers of color that are consistently used for higher end big budget projects, and that have a commercial image that producers feel that they can sell, and therefore they will pay them the same amount of money as someone else. And it's difficult. I mean, the industry is still, it still has vestiges of the good old boys from yesteryear that simply don't value the talent the way that we would like them to. So, it's the same reason why there's no residuals, because they don't feel that the performers, deserve it for the most part. It's just a matter of not placing the value. It's like, if I'm having sex with someone, I should be paid what I feel I should be paid to have sex with this person. And it's, when people ask me why are there no residuals, I'm like, well, because there's such a slut shaming and the stigma of doing porn that a lot of these young women that come in at 19 and 20 years old, when they're 24, 25, and they've decided that they don't want anybody to, they're out of the business and they're ashamed of the work that they do because someone told them that it was wrong. They don't want anybody to be able to find them when they're 30 and their husband doesn't know that they did porn when they were 20 so they can get residuals.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of reasons. And one of them also is like they didn't set up the system that way in porn and no one ever re-examined the system or how.
Because it works the way it does. You know, it's like they don't.
It works for the people at the top.
For the people at the top.
Yeah.
So, and it's like, and the women, and it continues this. It's the same thing that we see with age. You know, the young, well, that's changing. The age thing is changing and it has changed a great deal. But it used to be that by 23, you were gone because there was no use for you anymore. Now we see women coming in later and later at 40 and, you know, they're starting to see the value. But I've been in the business for 20 years and I've only started seeing women at 30 and 40 performing still or coming back into the business in the last 5 years. So is it going to take 15 years before we start to see, you know, people starting, you know, other areas of the industry starting to see that same kind of respect and companies starting to see value in those same performers? Maybe, but it's, you know, it's taken this long just for the producers to say, oh, well, just because a woman's 30 now doesn't mean that she's not, you know, people don't want to watch her have sex. She's still hot, you know? So,
yeah. Okay, well, we've got to take a break.
Okay.
But we've dug into some big issues already. So stay with us because the conversation continues after the break.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Good Vibrations is the San Francisco Bay Area-based women-friendly retailer trusted for more than 3 decades to provide a comfortable, welcoming, and safe environment for quality sex toys, educational materials, and products that enhance and empower one's sex life. Good Vibrations offers its products at 6 retail locations in San Francisco, Berkeley, and Oakland, California, and in Brookline, Massachusetts, as well as online at www.goodvibes.com. Online ordering is discreet and trusted. We believe that pleasure is your birthright, and one of our highly trained staff members can help you choose the product that is perfect for you at 1-800-BUY-VIBE. Call us 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time at 1-800-289-8423 or visit us online at www.goodvibes.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. Today, we are talking to Cinnamon Love, and we're in front of a live studio audience at Catalyst Con West here in Woodland Hills, California. And this show is brought to you by Good Vibrations. Lots of folks from Good Vibrations are here at the conference. Jackie Strano was one of the opening keynote plenary speakers along with Cinnamon. And you can go to goodvibes.com to check out all their amazing products, their sex education, all their resources. And you can use the code TristanGoodVibes for 20% off your purchase of $100 or more. So before the break, we were talking about some of these real inequalities for women of color and for people of color within porn. And my question is, what's the general feeling among your peers?
I mean, I think that, I mean, I can't speak for everybody, I'm a little removed from the performance part of the industry these days, but my experience is that definitely people are aware, people talk about it, just like we talk about, people talk about rates, people talk about how much people, directors or producers offered them to do certain things, and it's not something that's a secret. I don't know if people really get together over dinner and everybody's like bitching about it but it's not a secret by any means.
We've got a question from our audience. And just to tell you, just because you stepped up to the mic, you are going to win a fantastic prize, which is the amazing Thrill Vibrator from WeVibe. Go to WeVibe.com to check it out. Very exciting.
Hey, my name is Danny Wild. And
hi, Danny.
I'm actually in porn, but I came in a little later than you.
Yes.
So I have a question because I also noticed that, I go to set and typically when I'm booked in a scene, I'm a white male performer. I don't often see that many people of color opposite me.
Yes.
However, there are a few stars, like for example, Skin Diamond right now, who's blown up. And I think she's probably getting above a lot of white girl rates.
Yes.
But at the same time, there's like a black industry. I mean, we seem to fetishize like different races or ethnicities. Mm-hmm. Is there something about people who are crossing over to become like mainstream performers who are people of color? Do you think that like they have to take on certain like a whiteness or something like that? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I have a really interesting. I actually mentioned this in the feminist porn book that what I've come to find is that there are very two distinct types of women of color that or black women that you find in porn. A lot of the higher end productions that tend to have the where you find the crossover, the one black girl every 3 or 4 years that winds up being the big star. It was Marie Love for a while, and then it was Jada Fire before that, and it's always like there's always like one or two. The one thing that they all have in common are a very Eurocentric image of beauty, standard of beauty. Usually you find them with a smaller frame, a naturally smaller frame. They're usually not as curvaceous. And if they are curvy, they tend to be enhanced bodies. Like with Jada Fire, she has implants. She's naturally very, very tiny, but then she got implants. And then Marie Love, very, very thin, usually more Caucasian features, hair, long hair weaves. And, definitely you will not find black women specifically in higher end productions that have afros or dreadlocks or, more natural hair or Afrocentric features. Or, Jada was probably one of the only darker skin, darker complexion black women that I've ever seen in porn that crossed over like that. However, she does still have a very European, beauty image that appeals to the consumer base or to what the producers feel are the consumer base. So, and the same thing goes for a lot of the other, like a lot of Latin women that have been in the business. When you look at someone like Alexis Amor, she is Peruvian, but she has kind of a racially ambiguous look to her. And the other thing too is you look at people, or even Tara Patrick or Kobe Ty going years back to Vivid. And the other thing is, there's something about the branding. When you have a woman's name and some like the names that I just mentioned, Alexis Amor, Kobe Ty, Jada Fire, Marie Love, even women like Naomi Banks, these are women's names that allow the companies and the performer to brand themselves in a way where the consumer can identify with them as a woman as opposed to a fetishized object. Most women of color in the business have names that come from inanimate objects, cars, food, spices, animals, countries. So women like names of performers from my generation were Toy, Venus, Mercedes, India, Africa, sex. Like these are names that are, you know, Cinnamon, Mocha and Chocolate, who were the twins. You know, these are names that are inanimate objects that allow the consumer to fetishize the performers, and they, you know, by and large, they just don't get that type of crossover appeal. And we kind of, it kind of, it's almost degrading to a degree. And those women typically wind up in productions that are more ghetto, more debased, lower production values, smaller pay scales. And then, you know, they wind up being like B-list performers as opposed to A-list performers.
Can I ask just really quick on that note, when you say the names, did you pick your name, or do you think that those women picked their name? You didn't.
I did not pick my name.
And you think most women of color don't pick their names?
I think that some of them do, but they're not aware of the value of a name. You know, I was given my stage name. Like a lot of times women's stage names come from, what used to be, stage names came from stripper names. And because you would be a stripper and then you would get into the porn business because you can make more money on the feature circuit as a stripper, right? Which I have a lot to say about that, actually. I have something to say about the interracial issue, about women that don't perform, white women that don't perform with black men. So remind me to come back to that.
Okay.
Okay, so you would work it as a stripper, and that your stripper name would then become your porn name. So I wasn't a stripper. I was a college student. And in my third scene, which was with Kyle Stone, he, mid-stroke, he said, "Oh, my little cinnamon girl." And we stopped, like cinnamon girl, like from the song Cinnamon Girl. And we stopped and looked at each other, and it was like, that's your new name, that's your stage name, Cinnamon. So when I'm doing my release, I was like, should I put Cinnamon with a C or Cinnamon with an S? And they're like, no, put it with an S, put it with an S. And it stuck. And by the time I started to really look into the marketing aspect of porn, it was too late to change my name. I'd been Cinnamon for 8 years or 6 years. And I had a director that said to me, you don't want to change your name, it's going to be too hard for the fans to follow you. And because this is all pre-internet, so it wasn't that easy. You know, if all of a sudden they went in the store and asked for me by Jill, they wouldn't have found me. So that's something that a lot of women of color don't get. They don't get good marketing advice when it comes down to their careers from day one. White female performers, generally speaking, they have, there's someone, whether it's an agent or a manager or whatever their entry point is into the industry, that gives them a little bit more advice on how to go about having a really successful career. And that's why you get the top white female performers have always been, you know, you've got Jill Kelly, Janine, Jenna Jameson, Brittany Andrews, names that are women's names that when the companies then utilize these women for crossover promotion with mainstream companies, they can walk in and it doesn't sound like this is a stripper. It sounds like this could be her name. And that's the key. That's one of the main keys for having a successful crossover career, is having a name that someone can, when they hear it, they identify with you and not necessarily with, you know, a car.
Right. Well, you know, this is a fascinating theory that you obviously thought a lot about. And I think it's something that people just simply don't consider.
No.
It doesn't even occur to them.
Right.
This conversation, it seems like it could go on and on and on. I'm going to try to rein her in, but man, she's just so smart and articulate. Okay, we're going to take another break. So don't touch anything. Well, don't touch any of the technology. Stay with us. We'll be back.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
Turn off the TV and pick up the remote control that is sure to please. Worn while making love, the WeVibe 3 features whisper quiet motors that will keep you anything but quiet. We can't help it if the rechargeable battery lasts longer than you do. Learn more about the world's number one vibrator for couples at WeVibe.com. WeVibe. Share the pleasure.
Good Vibrations is the San Francisco Bay Area-based women-friendly retailer trusted for more than three decades to provide a comfortable, welcoming, and safe environment for quality sex toys, educational materials, and products that enhance and empower one's sex life. Good Vibrations offers its products at six retail locations in San Francisco, Berkeley, and Oakland, California, and in Brookline, Massachusetts, as well as online at www.goodvibes.com. Online ordering is discreet and trusted. We believe that pleasure is your birthright, and one of our highly trained staff members can help you choose the product that is perfect for you at 1-800-BUY-VIBE. Call us 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time at 1-800-289-8423. Or visit us online at www.goodvibes.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. Today we're recording in front of a live studio audience at Catalyst Con West. What a fantastic audience. Part of their enthusiasm stems from the fact that they're going to win fabulous prizes when they ask questions, including a fantastic vibrator from WeVibe. Go to WeVibe.com to see all their fantastic products. And we're giving away an awesome bondage kit from Sport Sheets. So you audience members better get to asking your questions so you can win these incredible prizes. Cinnamon.
Yes.
You brought up what's probably one of the most contentious and provocative topics within porn.
Yes.
And for porn viewers, and that is white female performers who will not perform with men of color. Although I should say, actually, that's not right. Because in porn, it's all about black men.
Yeah.
So white female performers who won't perform with black male performers, which is considered in the porn industry and called, I'm putting this in quotes, interracial.
Mm-hmm.
What are your feelings about that, Cinnamon?
Okay, so most people don't even know where that came from. And it's actually very interesting, and it's very smart business, all right? Because I look at porn is a business. This is it's all about capitalism. We're all trying to make money, right? Where that came from is that When primarily white female performers would go on the feature dance circuit, some of the bigger chains, like at the time, Deja Vu was the biggest biggest chain of strip clubs. Most of their stores are in the Bible Belt and in the Midwest. So if you are a female performer who has a white female performer who has had sex with black men, the feature dance agencies could not send you on a tour through the Midwest or in the Bible Belt because the racist good old boys would not come see you.
Wow, this is deep history that I didn't even know.
I thought there was
a kind of a just a blanket racism.
This is business. That's where it came from. Because if I'm a feature dance agent and I want to send you on a dance tour, on a Deja Vu tour, there are, let's say, like Michigan has 20 Deja Vu clubs. And then you have to go through all of the Midwest. You have to go through Kansas and North Dakota, and you've got to go through Minnesota and Wyoming, and you've got to go through Atlanta and Georgia and Texas. And you're going to have an empty club, and the guys are not going to want to see you if you've had sex with black men. So the idea of don't have sex with black men because it'll ruin your career. That's where it came from. Now, most of the agents and that tell the girls that now, that's not what they don't even know why they're telling them that.
Well, because to be clear, that absolutely was part of the business model.
Yes,
and people
for a very
could
long
make
time.
A ton of money feature dancing.
Yes.
That is no longer
true.
No.
The feature dance circuit is not the way that it used to be. But at the same time, the feature dance circuit has now been replaced by the nightclub circuit, where female porn performers will now be do hosting gigs at nightclubs where they do walkthroughs the same way that magazine models and video vixens and celebrities might do. They make a fraction of the money, but those kinds of that revenue stream doesn't have the same kind of impact when it comes down to having interracial sex. So agents are still telling girls something that historically was valid at one point that doesn't
made some kind of sense to someone. Doesn't really make sense.
But it doesn't make sense anymore because it doesn't apply. These days, if a girl has sex with, you look at someone like a Sasha Gray, her career definitely has not been hindered because she had sex with black men.
Right.
So there's people are still kind of going by this old business model that doesn't apply. And then also, I think you have just personal choice. I think that it's funny because I'm very interested in the escort sex worker model, and you see guys complain a lot about white women that won't have sex with black clients. And I actually tried to explain to some people once that
that's a thing.
It's a big thing.
We got to back up.
And the funny thing is though, because in Australia,
back up. Okay, so I am a black guy, and I call to book a model,
XYZ girl.
An escort.
Yeah.
And I say, I saw this one on the website. She looks good. And they say...
What nationality are you?
Really?
Yeah, it's as a part of their screening process. And sometimes some women won't have sex with black men, and the primary reason is the assumption of size. The assumption of penis size, because if you are a low level, a lower price level call girl who's booking at $300 an hour or $400 an hour, because remember at the beginning of the conversation, I talked about how much most escorts would make. So a lot of these women, if they're on tour and they're seeing 10 guys in a day, they don't want to have sex with five guys that are like really, really huge, and now they're sore and they can't work the next day. It defeats the purpose. So it makes sense on a business level, even though it may sound really racist.
Well, but there's an assumption built into it.
There's an assumption built into it.
That may or may not come to fruition.
That may or may not be true.
Yeah.
But you don't really know that because we don't have decriminalized or legalized prostitution in this country, so they can't ask those questions. Now in Australia, the women, because they don't have black people there. So in Australia, the girls don't want to see Asian men. It's really interesting.
This feels like a whole other book topic, which is around race within just escorting. Other parts of the sex.
Race and sex work. Yeah, race and sex work in general. And it's, go ahead.
We need to take a break.
Okay.
We need to take a break. And hear from our fabulous sponsors who are giving prizes out and doing fantastic things, including Astroglide. Astroglide Lube makes sex better. Go to astroglide.com to find out more. Stay with us. More Sex Out Loud when we return.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Enhance pleasure for you and the ones you love to love with Astroglide personal lubricants. Astroglide provides that extra oomph in creating a better and more exciting sexual experience. Astroglide's wide product range allows you to pick and choose based on personal preferences. All the products are also latex condom compatible, allowing for safer sex practices. Astroglide values the benefits of a fun and healthy sex life as part of a happier lifestyle. And so should you. For more information and a free sample, visit astroglide.com and get your sex life to blast off today.
Good Vibrations is the San Francisco Bay Area-based women-friendly retailer trusted for more than three decades to provide a comfortable, welcoming, and safe environment for quality sex toys, educational materials, and products that enhance and empower one's sex life. Good Vibrations offers its products at six retail locations in San Francisco, Berkeley, and Oakland, California, and in Brookline, Massachusetts, as well as online at www.goodvibes.com. Online ordering is discreet and trusted. We believe that pleasure is your birthright, and one of our highly trained staff members can help you choose the product that is perfect for you at 1-800-BUY-VIBE. Call us 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time at 1-800-289-8423 or visit us online at www.goodvibes.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. We're talking today with retired adult performer Cinnamon Love. And I just want to say, Cinnamon, there's so many ideas here. I probably have to have you on the show again because we've barely kind of scratched the surface. Mm-hmm. But one thing I do want to address is that you were one of the opening keynote plenary speakers, and you talked a lot about being a sex worker and a parent, mm-hmm. which I described and will describe as this kind of perfect place of the ultimate slut shaming, right? Mm-hmm. You are at the nexus of the Madonna whore dichotomy because you are the Madonna mother and the whore.
Yes.
And of course, I'm not meaning that in a derogatory sense.
No. And my book that I'm working on, that I'm starting next year, is called Madonna and Whore: Real Stories from Sex Work on Sex Work and Parenting.
Okay. And I didn't even know that. So we're totally like of one mind on
this.
Yes,
exactly.
So I wonder, and you're also presenting, you presented a panel on parenting, sex, and the media. Mm-hmm. And so tell me about some of the conversations that this has started for you, because I think it's taboo. I think that there obviously are tons of sex workers who are also parents.
Yes.
But they don't say that or talk about that, especially in public.
No. I mean, I think that a lot of people feel they assume that if people know that they are parents, that it will decrease their value in the marketplace. So they try to hide the fact that they're parents, or there's some, you know, out of fear for safety, they may decide that they want to, you know, to withhold that information. There's a website that has the prize itself in trying to out adult stars about their private lives. And on the profile that they put on me, they actually listed my children's, not only my mother, my parents' like Facebook pages, because that's what they do in the site. They listed links to my children's Facebook pages, but only my daughter's, not my son. And, you know, including my youngest daughter at the time. Well, my youngest daughter is a minor. And, you know, on the profile, they actually said that I have the audacity or that I don't feel that there's anything wrong. I don't have a problem with saying that I do porn and that I have children in the same breath. And for me, it's like, well, yeah, I have children. Why would I be ashamed of that? They came out of my vagina. Like, they're awesome human beings. Like, of course I'm proud of the fact that I'm a parent. If I can't stand before you know, an audience and say, yes, I'm a parent, that makes me a bad parent. Because I should be proud of the fact that I have children. My first job in my life is to be a mother. That's my priority. That's where I'm, you know, that's the thing that's most important to me. My work is just my work. I mean, if something happened and I lost a limb tomorrow and decided I couldn't work anymore, then I would no longer be a porn star. Like, you know, that day, you know, comes to an end for a lot of people, but being a parent will go on until the day that I die. So there's no reason for me or anyone, in my opinion, to deny the fact that you're a parent. If people are prejudiced against you when it comes down to working because you're a parent, those are not people you want to work for.
But I think also underneath this is some sort of anxiety that as a sex worker, you are going to expose children to sex,
right,
or expose them to inappropriate things, or show right. them porn, or
absolutely.
Recruit them into to porn.
The
right.
When I was going through my divorce, I had a child custody mediator that had to come out to both of my ex-husband and my homes to investigate our houses and see what was suitable situations. And I had fine art books and erotic literature on my bookshelves. And my kids were really young at the time. They were like a year and a half and 6 months old. And all she did was say, take these books and put them on the top shelf. And I was like, okay. It's that easy? All right. But that got me to thinking about how to kind of porn-proof my house. Like, much like a lot of people, when their parents are coming to visit, they take all their sex toys and they put them away. Well, I have a box with all my rope. And I have, you know, my bedroom is my sacred space where I can have whatever I want. But, you know, I don't have, you know, my kids know that I have an open relationship. And they see girlfriends come by that stay the night and they're there at 8 o'clock in the morning when they're leaving for school, but they're not seeing us have sex in the living room. It's like there are ways, as a parent, if you are a responsible parent, then you can, then there's no reason for you to fear, you know.
But part of this panic is about all of these assumptions, and that is that you have no boundaries mm-hmm. around anything because right. you're a sex worker, which is bullshit.
And I think because people are so comfortable with hiding the fact that they're parents and they have this normal life, it allows people to continue to have this stigma, this ideal in their head that sex workers are dirty, creepy people that shouldn't be around children. But the more people come out as parents, then the more people will be able to see the normalcy, and we can start to decrease that ideal image that people have in their head of what sex workers are.
Well, we've got a question from the audience, and this mm-hmm. lucky person is going to win a fantastic vibrator from Good Vibrations, mm-hmm. goodvibes.com. Okay, go.
I'm Emily, and I was at your panel earlier today. One of the things that you seemed really passionate about was sex education for young people with different developmental needs and their parents. And I was wondering if your life with your diverse sexual experience has helped you to have some perspective and to be sensitive to people who might need a little more tailoring and a little more explanation in their sexual education.
Yes, it has. Having a son that has that's on the autism spectrum, it has really changed how I view sex education, because you know, he doesn't understand basic social norms. I mean, we had a situation where there was a girl that was obviously flirting with him to me and to his neurotypical 16-year-old sister. She would take his backpack. You know, he sat with her and her friends a couple days at the lunch table. And then the third day, he decided he didn't want to sit with them. So she took his backpack and sat it next to her, so that he had to come back over and sit next to her to get his backpack. But to him, he thought that she was bullying him.
Oh.
he didn't see that as flirting, because since he is on the autism spectrum, he doesn't understand basic social norms associated with flirting and dating. So that got me to really thinking about the type of sex education that he had received in public high school and middle school, which is taught assuming that all of these kids know what social norms are. But in the last 5 years, we've seen a huge increase in kids on the autism spectrum. So that being the case, how about we give these kids a sex ed that is tailored to them? And specifically, because you have kids that are developmentally delayed, their psychological age and their chronological age are usually completely different. So at 18, my son was psychologically 13, but he was in high school with kids that are, you know, that were, you know, his age, but he, you know, he hadn't caught up to them yet. At 20 in high school, he's in school, because in New York, he has the right to a public high school education until 21. He's graduated though now. But the thought clicked in my head, if he's in high school at 20 or 21 with 14-year-olds and 15-year-olds, and this public, you know, sex ed doesn't teach age of consent, then I run the risk of my son going to jail for statutory rape, even though his psychological age is the same age as the girl that he might be dating. So these types of concerns for my own son has prompted my getting involved with trying to make people aware that they too need to go to their schools and get involved with the heartbeats of the PTA and demand better sex education, much like, you know, there's sex ed doesn't take into account trans, teenagers or people with any other kind of physical disabilities. We have to start accounting for the psychological disabilities for these kids too, so that they can have a chance at a better sex life.
We have time for just one more question. If anyone wants to win a prize, now is the time. Okay, it's going to be my question then. You've been doing a lot of college speaking lately.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, what is the most common question that college students ask you? What do college students want to know about your life?
College students want to know if I had real orgasms. They want to know the percentage of real orgasms to fake orgasms in my scenes. And that's usually how they phrase it. They ask me, what's the percentage of real orgasms to fake orgasms you had when you were working?
Fascinating. No, this is a fascinating thing. And that's, I mean, what is the answer?
All my orgasms were real, because I'm lucky enough to have a really good relationship with my body. So I can have an orgasm whether I have a partner or not. And because I know my body, I know how to tell my partners on screen or off screen what to do to get me off. Because my philosophy with porn has always been, I'm already getting a paycheck, I might as well have a good time.
Well, that's a philosophy that maybe we can extend to other careers that we have. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, Cinnamon.
Yes, thank you for having me. Yay.
Cinnamon Love is retired from porn, but you can still see her in action. And you can also read some of her fantastic writing and blogs at cinnamonlove.com. You can also read her work at thewellversed.com and listen to her internet radio show at dtfradio.com. Follow her on Twitter at Cinnamon Love. All of these links and more can be found at sexoutloudradio.com. Click on the link for episode resources. You can always find me at puckerup.com and on Twitter at Tristan Taramino. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible: executive producer Karen Dana, associate producer Raymond Johnson, segment producer and editor, and the person running the board today, Colton, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, Matt, my engineer, everyone at Voice America, and Danny Wild for lending us his audio equipment. If you missed any part of the show or want to hear it again, you can listen on demand or download the MP3 by going to voiceamerica.com and searching for Sex Out Loud. You can also subscribe to it, and you should, as a podcast on iTunes. Tune in next Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern for another edition of Sex Out Loud. Until then, I encourage you to keep the discussion going on facebook.com/asktristan, on Twitter @SexOutLoudRadio, and in your own life. Take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.
Sex Out Loud is brought to you by Good Vibrations, creating a buzz since 1977.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.